Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. LIVIN.
I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Yeah, he's playing tomorrow. We'll take it from there. I'm not navigating it anymore. I'm done. You know, I'm going to coach the team, and that's what I was here for. So I'm not navigating anything else or any other questions that doesn't relate to basketball or, you know, our performance or the opponent we're playing. That's where I am with it.
Our man, Alvin Gentry, has had enough. I ain't going to talk about it. I ain't going to do it no more. I'm just going to coach the team. That is a man that sounds tired, exhausted, and just ready for the season to be over. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the season, Alvin Gentry, head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans, is like, you know what? I don't want to coach basketball no more. I don't even want to coach an AAU team. I don't want to coach little dribblers. Nothing. I'm done. I'm just done, man. I'm done. The brow and his agent and Dell Demps and all this drama has made me hate basketball. That's what I heard when listening to Alvin Gentry there speak yesterday when he met with the media about the Pelicans coming back from the All-Star break. They return to the hardwood tonight in Indianapolis facing the Indiana Pacers. And they'll be back home on Saturday inside the Smoothie King Center versus the Los Angeles Lakers. Yes. This is Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 Game, your home of the LSU Tigers. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, as always, up in here in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We got a jam-packed show for you today. Our friend Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, senior columnist, is going to break down all things football. We'll talk a little college. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk some Alliance. That's right, Alliance football as well. We'll do that with Connor O'Gara at 9:32. At 10:32, Tyler Nunes from Tiger Rag is going to help us go back. Look, now that a few days have passed, look at LSU's disappointing overtime loss to Florida the other night and help us preview Saturday's marquee matchup inside the Pete Maravich Assembly Center, the PMAC, when LSU welcomes number 5-ranked Tennessee to town. By the way, pregame for that can be listened right here live on 103.7 The Game at 10:30 a.m., tip at 11. Tyler will join us at 10:32. We'll also have my rant of the week and RPOs with RP3, the Joey edition. But we're going to start off with the Pels. And you heard the frustration in Alvin Gentry's voice. You can't blame him for being frustrated. He's tired of talking this. He just told you he's tired. It's a lost season. For a team that had such high aspirations, right? It wasn't that long ago. At this time last year, the Pels were making a push to the playoffs. Boogie Cousins had gotten hurt, the all-star center that they had traded for. They make a trade deadline move to get Meritek in from the Chicago Bulls. Gave up a first-rounder. He comes in, the big fellow that can shoot the three. He's on the court. It's AD. Drew Holiday is blossoming into a great two-way player. Rajon Rondo's inserted into the starting lineup, and he becomes playoff Rondo, like the old Boston Celtics kind of Rondo. And this team is making a push to the playoffs a year ago. And then they get to the playoffs, and they upset and stun the Portland Trail Blazers, the higher seed. And then they gave the Warriors everything they could in the second round. But, man, as soon as the end of the season started, the wheels fell off. It just came right off. Cousins was reported turned down an extension, turned down a contract offer. He leaves. He's injured, had the ruptured Achilles. He leaves and goes to the team, goes to the dynasty, the Death Star of the NBA, that is the Golden State Warriors, signs a veteran's minimum one-year deal. So he's gone. Rajon Rondo leaves. And Rondo, not only was it playoff Rondo, but what he was able to do by being on the floor and letting Drew Holiday play not in the one spot, but on the two where he's more of a natural. He pushed Anthony Davis to become a better player. He pushed Drew Holiday to become a better player. He provided that kind of leadership that doesn't show up in a stat sheet. He decides to leave to go sign a one-year deal with the Lakers. Uh-oh. AD makes a change in his agent when he goes out and gets Rich Paul. And he becomes Rich Paul's client, who just so happens to be the agent for LeBron James. And even then, you talk to folks down in New Orleans, and they were like, they didn't like that move. There was something about the fact that Rondo didn't want to come back and re-sign with the team that helped revitalize his career. Because if you remember, Rajon Rondo looked like he was on the trash heap after short stints in Dallas, Sacramento. Rondo was no longer the Rondo of old. He was known as a malcontent, and he didn't play hard. What he showed in New Orleans was great. It was old, vintage Rajon Rondo. And instead of staying with the team, that's when I knew. I was like, something's not right in Pelican land. They just came off a first-round upset playoff win. Boogie bells, okay. Rajon Rondo bells. And I'm like, that's odd to go play for a terrible Lakers team. Okay. Anthony Davis switches agents. But still, there was promise. You still had Anthony Davis coming back. You had Drew Holiday coming back. They bring in Elfrid Payton, former Raging Cajun star player. He was going to kind of provide that role as the point guard and let Drew play off. You still had Maricek under contract, so you had him, you had Anthony Davis, you had Drew. And then you do a great pickup in Julius Randle, who's been a terrific player for the Pels. He really has. But this team never got it together. Whether it was Alvin Gentry's coaching, whether it was the dynamics of the team, depth has been an issue. You know, you had a few shining moments of Etuan Moore early in the season. But then Elfrid Payton got hurt. He's barely played at all this season. Anthony Davis got banged up. The losses piled up. One after another, after another, after another. They went through that phase, remember, in November and early December where they'd lose a game, win a game, lose a game, win a game, lose a game, win a game. They were not a good team. They were not gelling. They did not play well together. Yes, they had injuries, but that's always the cop-out. Well, they're banged up. They have injuries. Yeah. Every professional sports team in any league has injuries to star players or significant players. There's not one. There's never been one in the history of mankind of professional sportsdom that doesn't have a player or two that have been injured or banged up or playing through injuries. That comes with being a professional athlete. And then Anthony Davis requests the trade, and everything went to hell in a handbasket. Maricek's been traded a first-rounder for him. They got a second-rounder and a bunch of G League guys. Wow. Dell Demps has been fired. And now, Anthony Davis requested a trade, and they didn't trade him. Dell Demps got fired. The NBA enforced and told the Pelicans that they had to play AD. But we were thinking after the All-Star break that interim GM Danny Ferry. Reports came out that he was going to try to convince the NBA to let them just not play AD, that they would pay him, but they were tired of the distraction that it was causing for their head coach, for the team, for the franchise, for the city. But that's not what is going to happen. They announced yesterday that Anthony Davis will receive playing time. He will not ride the pine. Now, his playing time will be diminished slightly, as will Drew Holiday's. The Pelicans front office has decided to honor the NBA's request not to have Anthony Davis be a healthy scratch. So what they're going to do is that to help appease the NBA, they're going to give Anthony Davis playing time. What they're going to do, though, is he'll probably play half a game each game the rest of the way. And Drew Holiday will do the same. So what the Pels are going to do, the season is lost. They're not going to make the playoffs. So instead of having that team out there with Anthony Davis and trying to win games and everything, no. They're going to appease the NBA, but they're only going to play him probably about a half a game. Same thing for Drew Holiday. They're not getting rid of Drew. They're just going to save him and not wear him and not run him into the ground this season. And they're going to let the other guys, the younger players, get more playing time. Guys like Okafor, other guys like Elfrid Payton and Julius Randle, who are going to be free agents this summer, they're going to get a lot more playing time. It was reported yesterday to Elfrid Payton, who's been banged up. He's going to be back. He's going to play tonight at Indiana. Once again, the fine was going to be $100,000 for every game in which Anthony Davis was a healthy scratch. And we talked about it here on the show. Why doesn't Gail Benson, the queen, as the Saints players refer to her as, she's the owner of the New Orleans Saints as well as the New Orleans Pelicans, just send the NBA a check? And Andrew Lopez broke it down for us yesterday here on the Rap Game, where he said that she has too much respect for the league and too much respect for the commissioner, Adam Silver, to do that, to be that kind of defiant and to cause even more of a distraction. So he's going to see reduced amount of playing time. Drew Holiday is going to see a reduced amount of playing time. And other guys are going to get more reps. So they get to appease the NBA. Anthony Davis still gets to be in a uniform for, you know, a few more games. They're going to protect Drew Holiday. They're going to protect Anthony Davis, who Drew Holiday is now going to be their franchise player. And Anthony Davis is, he's the big asset, right? So they're going to have to protect him as well. And let the younger guys try to play either to prove themselves to whoever the new general manager and director of basketball operations is going to be, or the new coach, or show the rest of the NBA, hey, look, this is what I can do to help them in free agency, whether that's Elfrid Payton or Julius Randle. Even though indications are that Julius Randle would like to come back, which if he does come back, that would be a good piece. So Danny Ferry said this, and we'll wrap it up with this, that the Pels are focusing on the future means, quote, this. You will see a reduction in Anthony's minutes. You'll probably see Drew's minutes come down because his minutes have been so high all year, but it probably won't be quite as dramatic. The league rules made it clear Anthony has to play. As we've done previously, we will continue to follow their lead, but we also will be focused on the future of this team. So they're having their cake and eating it too. They're being forced to play Anthony Davis. That lets you know that they would rather just have him sit and not play a single minute again in a Pelicans uniform. But since the NBA is kind of asking them for a solid here, that's how I take it. I don't take it as they're cowering to the league. I take it as we respect the process, we respect the league office, so we will play Anthony Davis, but his minutes will be drastically reduced. And then we're also going to help protect our franchise player moving forward as well and let the younger guys. So we're not really tanking, but we kind of are. So it's a compromise, right? It's a respectful compromise of we're forced to be in this situation. You won't let us do what we want to do. So we'll play him, but we'll reduce his minutes, and we'll kind of tank in the process to ensure that we're probably in the draft lottery and don't play ourselves out of it. And if you're a diehard New Orleans Pelicans fan, you can probably relate to Alvin Gentry. Because I don't know about you, fans, Pel fans, but I kind of agree with Alvin Gentry. I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And, man, I can't wait for this season to be over because I love, A, I love NBA playoff basketball, but, B, I'll be ready for this to be done with the Pels and the whole distraction that that's become for not only the city of New Orleans, but for the state of Louisiana, for that matter. When we come back, we'll have a special Friday edition of Louisiana Wrap-Up right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Ricky Bobby.
Shake it back.
Happy Gilmore.
You're gonna die, clown!
Gordon Bombay.
The real Minnesota Miracle Man.
And Peter LaFleur.
You want to become a cheerleader to prove to a girl that you are not a loser? High school's changed a little bit since I was a kid.
These are sports heroes that we can all look up to. Back to the show with the host who's got a tattoo of each one. Rap Game with RP3.
Welcome back.
It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up.
There we go. Welcome back to RP3 featuring, or Rap Game, excuse me, featuring the one and only RP3. And we are jumping right into the Rap Game exclusive. You know what that is. It is the Louisiana Wrap-Up. Now, Raymond, I heard about some very important stuff that happened yesterday, and I need your input on it. What went on over in Arlington, Texas, my man?
The Raging Cajuns men's basketball team got a huge victory, 76-64 over UT Arlington, the team that knocked them out of the Sun Belt Conference tournament last year and dashed their hopes of making the big dance. Now, UT Arlington is, you know, they're 12-15 now, so they're not a great team this year, but getting a road victory in conference play, building them that momentum, we talked about it earlier this week. The Cajuns now will have to play Texas State, who's number one in the conference in the rankings. They built up some momentum. They beat ULM, avenged an earlier season loss to the Warhawks. Now they went on the road, took care of UT Arlington. They're 16-10 overall. Now they're above 500 in conference play. They keep slowly climbing those rankings. That's going to help them for seeding for the Sun Belt Conference tournament held down at UNO Lakefront Arena there in New Orleans. And they got a great across-the-board contributions last night. Davis chipped in with 19. Justin Miller had 15 and 12 rebounds. Jakinen Gant had an off night. He only scored 11 points. Yes, Jakinen Gant can have a game where he doesn't score 20-plus points. He had 11 points, 7 boards. But Cedric Russell, the former Peabody Magnet star, sophomore guard, he stepped up with 14 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. So, and Stroman had an off night. Only 4 points, 4 assists, 2 rebounds. So, Gant and Stroman, their two best players, didn't have a great game, but other guys stepped up, which is a great sign for Bob Marlin's squad moving forward, that their two best players have an off night. Other guys made sure to step up. They get the victory on the road. Congratulations to the Raging Cajuns. They got another tough game, though, on Saturday versus Texas State.
All right, Ray. We're moving right along down to South Louisiana over from Texas, and I heard about some news in the Big Easy. We got a 504 line calling right now, so Ray, tell us, what happened over there in New Orleans?
The Saints are sneakily clearing cap space, and they're doing it very... We already know that Alex Okafor opted out of that last... So he's not coming back, so they're going to save cap money there. Yesterday, the Saints released veteran safety Kurt Coleman a year after signing him. He was brought in to bring a veteran presence to the back end of the secondary, longtime Carolina Panther safety. But Kurt could never really get onto the field. I know he provided leadership, but Von Bell kind of beat him out for his job, okay, the former Ohio State star. And they've already parted ways with Kurt Coleman. Now, they have a nice young secondary. Remember, they traded for Eli Apple from the New York Giants, also played at Ohio State, teammates with Von Bell at the safety position. You already have Marshawn Lattimore, another Ohio State guy. So it's essentially the Buckeyes' last national championship team is essentially the secondary for the Saints. But what Coleman does in the Okafor move that's already occurred, Coleman would have counted $7 million against the salary cap. The move will save the Saints $4 million in space. Okay? You're thinking, well, $4 million is not a lot. No, it kind of is, especially for a team that doesn't have a lot of draft picks like the Saints do, and they're going to have to pay all this extra money and everything like this. So, you know, they're going to have an opportunity. They're making some strong moves. Okafor's going to be going. His replacement's going to be Marcus Davenport. Coleman's now been cut. He wasn't even a starter this year, but Von Bell's moved into that role. They'll use a young guy as a backup. So the Saints are making some moves here, saving money, getting under the salary cap to possibly bring in a strong free agent, maybe a tight end, maybe another offensive lineman, or maybe having the money to sign Mark Ingram. So this is why this move is of note. Joey, Saints already making moves to help their salary cap situation.
All right, Ray, and to put a bow on this Louisiana wrap-up today, we're going to make it full circle and bring it right back home. I heard about some stuff in Lafayette. Raymond, tell me what's going on over here.
247 Sports reported yesterday that Billy Napier has added to his staff for the Raging Cajuns football team. He's entering his second year, and he's already adding a former Alabama linebacker to his staff. Nico Johnson reportedly is reuniting with Billy Napier. Nico was a four-year letterman, and I want to say a two-year starter for Alabama from 2009 to 2012, which means he won a couple of national titles. He's joining Billy Napier's staff at Louisiana as a defensive quality control staffer. I don't even know what the hell that means. It's just an assistant coach position, okay? And that's according to CBS's Sports Barton Simmons. Napier was an offensive assistant for the Tide in 2011 while Johnson was in school. And we know that Billy was able to lead the Raging Cajuns last year to the Sun Belt Conference Championship game into a bowl game, which they ended up, unfortunately, losing to Tulane. Nico spent three seasons in the NFL. He was selected by the Chiefs in the fourth round, bumped around the league a little bit. He won three national championships, okay? And he was an all-SEC selection. We talk all the time about what Billy Napier's doing here in Lafayette, about how he's going to be taking his version of the process, of Nick Saban's process. He already has guys on his staff that worked for Nick, like Rob Sale and others, offensive coordinator. Now he's got a guy that played for Nick. It was a four-year letterman for Nick. Nico is an intense dude. All right? You're bringing in a guy that understands Nick Saban's process, played for him. This is a big move. It kind of fell under the radar. But I'm telling you, adding Nico to the staff is going to be a huge plus. They're going to use him to help develop that side of the ball, those linebackers, those pass rushers. Nico's going to be some type of capacity. I don't care what his title is. You're going to see him working with the defense. I can guarantee you that. So big, strong move by the Raging Cajuns football team adding Nico Johnson to the staff. That's going to do it for the Louisiana wrap-up. When we come back after this break, we're going to talk to Connor O'Gare, Saturday Down South, all things football, right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Everybody loves Raymond, and everybody loves the end of a commercial break. This must be a good moment for you. Let's get back to Rap Game with RP3.
Loud at times. How did you combat the noise?
I think it was just as loud as Rocky Top, to tell you the truth. And I know the swamp is maybe a little bit louder than here.
Steve Spurrier, the old ball coach. That man is an absolute national treasure. He has not coached against Tennessee in a few years. He did not really coach against them since his days in Florida. And yet, our man, the old ball coach, in the Alliance, finds an opportunity to still throw just a little bit of shade towards the Volunteers. You gotta love the old ball coach. We're going to talk more about the treasure that is the old ball coach with our next guest here on Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. He's a senior columnist for Saturday Down South. It's the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you this morning, brother?
I am. I'm doing well. I don't have any shade to throw like Spurrier, but you know, I'm getting me riled up on a few things, and I bet I could.
Well, let's start with the old ball coach, man. I just, first of all, tremendous hire for the Alliance. He is in 2 weeks. I know, you know, Trent Richardson has become kind of a story of the league, but he's become the face of this league in a very short time, and I don't think that's a bad thing. And he just seems to be the right coach for this league. I mean, when I see him out there, he's excited. He looks like he's having fun again, unlike the last half year or whatever that he was at South Carolina where he looked miserable. He looks like he's having fun. He looks like old Florida Steve Spurrier, or hell, even old Bandit Ball Steve Spurrier. What has been your impression of the old ball coach with the Alliance?
Yeah, so I was there a couple weeks ago for his debut in Orlando and just kind of getting to see up close what it was going to be like. Because, I mean, I went in with some limited expectations, and I came away realizing even more so that Spurrier is just going to be viral gold for this league. And you're right. I mean, he is the perfect person from a marketing standpoint, from a football standpoint, from everything that you would want. He is the perfect fit for this league. He is the face of the league, in my opinion. I don't think there's any question about it. The sun and gun offense that he's going to run, and he's doing trick plays like, you know, the Philly special. They called it the Orlando special, and they got him mic'd up on the sideline, and everything he's saying is just so perfect. And like, he's at the point now where he's past caring about whose feelings he hurts. Like, it doesn't matter if he throws shade at SEC teams. Like, it's great. It's so great because this league needs that. I mean, let's be honest. This league needs some characters. You can't have a faceless league. As a brand, it's never going to really grow unless you have some people to bring in some respectability like Spurrier. And I just think that everything he does in this league is going to be consumed from a national standpoint, from a local standpoint, and he's an easy guy to get behind. If they had 8 Spurriers in this league coaching teams, I mean, I think we'd all be talking about this in a different light. But what he is going to be able to bring, just from a personality standpoint, from a schematic standpoint, is so important for the early stages of whether or not this thing is going to get some life.
Connor, what are your thoughts on the league itself? When I see, I've watched it now for a few weeks, and it's not terrible football. And I know that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but it's very much kind of like East-West Shrine Game type of talent. It's a college all-star level of guys. These are a lot of guys that are practice squad players, guys that are going to try to fight their way into training camp with an NFL team, and some other guys that careers are over and they're trying to just hang on, right? So you have that nice mix. The football has not been terrible. I'm interested to know from your standpoint, why do you think the NFL has embraced this league with allowing games to be broadcast on the NFL Network? Is this that's my first question to you. Why do you think the NFL was so receptive in that regard?
The NFL needs this. There has been a need for a spring developmental league, and unlike the XFL, the Alliance has gone about this the right way in trying to partner with the NFL and be a complement to it instead of trying to go against it and say, we are going to provide a better product. The Alliance of American Football is never going to come close to the NFL product, and they recognize that from a very early standpoint. But at the same time, we're talking about a sport that really doesn't have a true minor league system. And the CFL and the Arena League are so different from a rule standpoint and just kind of the audience that they covet and the fact that, you know, the time of year that these games are being played. I think it's just a different ballgame when you're talking about this because of the way that they're going about the rules, the way that they've made some nice minor tweaks to have quicker games. They want all these games to be played in 2.5 hours. These games are being played with guys that were faces of college football like 3 years ago. I mean, you have 5-star recruits, guys who were fixtures that we were talking about as potential All-Americans playing in this game that I think a lot of fans recognize. So there is some recognizability with it, and it isn't just, you know, a guy like Trent Richardson. And I think there are guys who have legitimate chances to get back to the NFL because, for one reason or another, it's pretty easy to fall through the cracks, right? I mean, it's not always necessarily, oh, this guy just didn't have the talent to be able to make it. I mean, certain guys, they have one thing go wrong for them, and it's like, yeah, well, that was their margin of error. And all of a sudden, they don't really have a chance to really spotlight that. And being on a practice squad isn't always the best opportunity to do that. So I think it's great that you get to see these guys in live game action. You know, we'll kind of wait and see how many of these guys get NFL chances, but the timeline of it sets up much better because this season wraps up in April, and then they could just go into an NFL training camp, wait to see how the draft goes, and then this is going to set up really well for them if they want to do that for NFL teams as opposed to trying to mess around with the CFL, which is playing in the summer, and you've got these guaranteed contracts. It's just a little bit of a different scenario with this, and I like the way that they've gone about this despite the fact that they've had some negative headlines the last week.
We're on with Connor O'Gara, senior columnist for Saturday Down South. A guy that has really kind of stood out to me in the first 2 weeks, and the name that is kind of a compelling story, is Garrett Gilbert. And this is a guy who had so much hype coming out of high school, Connor. And you know this. He was Mr. Texas Football. He was the Gatorade Football Player of the Year, the USA Today Offensive Player of the Year, All-American as a high schooler, gets to Texas, doesn't work out, ends up at SMU. He's a late-round draft pick, and then he bounces around the league, Rams, Patriots, Lions, Raiders, Panthers, okay, as a practice squad guy, as a training camp guy. He's looked really good. Is that the kind of scenario that you're talking about, as a guy that a highly touted guy that kind of fell through the cracks, college didn't end up being what we thought it was going to be? He's looked really good through – I know it's only 2 weeks, but he's looked really good in 2 weeks of games.
Yeah, he's exactly the guy that comes to mind, and getting to kind of – see the way that he interacted with, you know, just talking with him, you know, post game and after that first game. And I think he even said those exact words of guys who fall through the cracks. And he is a good example of that. And obviously he had a ton of eyes on him coming out of high school. When you come in that highly touted, I mean, you're going to be given an opportunity, but, you know, for one reason or another, it just didn't work out at Texas. And I think there are a lot of guys like this that, you know, get him with somebody like Spurrier that just can understand like how to scheme guys open, and I think that he's going to have a chance to succeed. Now, I'll be interested to see kind of what's next for him, because if he keeps putting up numbers like this, I mean, there's going to be NFL teams that are going to say, hey, you know, maybe we should give you more than just a practice squad look, and you could easily be a number three guy on our depth chart. I mean, I think that he has shown signs of doing just that, and he's got some really talented receivers to work with, you know, guys like Jalen Marshall, who was a five-star at Ohio State a few years back and had a little success as a rookie in the NFL. And, you know, somebody like Charles Johnson, who had some high expectations in Minnesota a couple years ago. And so, you know, getting to play with Spurrier, his talent is being maximized right now. And I think that, you know, he is one of those guys that could pop up in a couple years. And that's his hope and that's his goal. And he's still, you know, I think he's only, what, 27, 28 years old. So yeah. There's still a chance for guys like that. And it's not a bunch of guys who are past their prime and are just trying to hang on for dear life. And that's kind of been the breath of fresh air with this thing.
Connor, I affiliated myself in the preseason. So I was like, hey, I'm gonna support this spring football. So I was like, you know, the Memphis Express. I love the name. They got all intense, overly intense. Mike Singletary is their coach. They had a ton of guys from the SEC on their roster, including a lot of LSU guys. And Memphis appears to be the second worst team in this entire league. They got Christian Hackenberg out there not playing well. What's your thoughts of Memphis, and in particular Christian Hackenberg? You know, Zach Mettenberger, former LSU star, he's the backup. Negative headlines already with Hackenberg. What are your thoughts about him and that team?
I've been following Christian Hackenberg for a long time, just because, you know, I write for a Big Ten site as well at Saturday Tradition, and I've kept a close eye on him, just, you know, because expectations for him were really, really high, I think, when James Franklin arrived at Penn State. And I don't want to, you know, I promise this will lead into kind of what you've seen from him in the early going in the Alliance, but I've had this theory for a long time that – if Bill O'Brien had stayed at Penn State, Christian Hackenberg is playing in the NFL and maybe even starting in the NFL somewhere. I firmly believe that he was somebody who did not benefit from that coaching change and did not benefit from the fact that an offensive line that he played with in his later years was just terrible. And I think he just got spooked. And I think he was one of those guys where he just got the yips. And all of a sudden, like, this confidence that he played with when he was this five-star recruit who somehow stuck with Penn State despite those sanctions that they were dealing with in the post-Jerry Sandusky era was, you know, a guy who just, like, can't get that magic back. And I think you're still seeing signs of that where, you know, he is a little bit gun-shy when it comes to protection. And a lot of the intangibles that you see from him when he's just in shorts and he's throwing at the combine and doing these things, he looks really good. And then you get him into live game action, and all of a sudden it's deer in headlights all over again. So, I wish the Christian Hackenberg story could have gone differently because, you know, even in the NFL, I think if he had gone to the right team, he would have had a chance to at least stick around for a little bit longer. I don't think he was damaged goods completely yet, but I just think that he's been in some bad situations. And I think that at this point now, kind of seeing what we've seen from him the last couple of weeks, it's hard to really buy into the belief that he is one of those guys that has fallen through the cracks. I think he might just, you know, this just has not worked out, and I don't know necessarily if quarterbacking is in his future.
On with Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, featured columnist. Connor, let's switch over to college. You had an interesting piece up on the website, I guess about 7 days ago, that I wanted to talk about. Todd Grantham's decision was kind of a surprise to a lot of folks, maybe nationally. He turned down the Cincinnati Bengals defensive coordinator job to return to Florida. And now, obviously, this is a huge deal for Dan Mullen, who did a tremendous job in year one at Florida. But kind of elaborate a little bit about the process of Todd's process of deciding, no, I don't want to be a DC in the NFL. I'm going to come back and remain at Florida.
One of the things that I thought was important to remember with Todd Grantham is this is somebody who is at his eighth different place in the 21st century. And, you know, that matters, you know, like that. I think as human beings, moving is the worst. And I kind of tend to think that at a certain point, you just kind of want to say, like, all right, yes, I'm an assistant, but I kind of just want to settle down at some point. And he's got this thing at Florida where he goes in there. He's Dan Mullen's right hand man for the last 2 years because he was there the last year at Mississippi State, and he's doing really, really well. And he has a chance to make that kind of money and stick around in Gainesville. And you kind of just think to yourself, well, man, that's not such a bad gig at all. And there are reports that he was actually going to make less with the Bengals than what he would have made at Florida, which is kind of amazing to think about. But it kind of also speaks to what has become the increasing market for assistants in college football, because it has boomed in the playoff era. I mean, I don't know if we realize this, but go back to 2012. Todd Grantham is making, I think, $825,000. He's the sixth highest paid assistant in the country. There were only two assistants in college football who made $1 million that season. In this past season, in 2018, there were 21. I mean, that's what we're talking about here in terms of how these salaries have really increased. And yeah, Dave Aranda's salary at LSU kind of set the bar for that. I know Brent Venables got paid a whole lot of money because of that, and obviously because of the success that he's had at Clemson. But, you know, if you look at the way that these salaries have really increased, Grantham could kind of be a microcosm for what this new big-time college football has become, and that is leaving for a defensive coordinator or a coordinator position in the NFL might not make a lot of sense for them, because if they're going to get paid the same amount of money, I mean, there are a whole lot of benefits to staying in college and kind of being the guy because of the control that you get in terms of roster control and all that stuff. There are some big time benefits. So I do think that it is becoming more and more likely that these big time programs are able to keep their top assistants because of the money that they're now being paid, and it makes a whole lot more sense to do that. And maybe even these coaches don't want to go to Group of Five schools. That used to be the traditional route where, you know, if you're an assistant at a big-time program, then you go and try and be a Group of Five head coach and then maybe a Power Five head coach. Top Group of Five coach in the country last year made $2.6 million. I mean, that's not a whole lot more than what Todd Grantham is getting to be a coordinator at Florida. So I just think that there are a lot of different little wrinkles to this, but
you know, ultimately, I think Florida got a major win by keeping one of the best coordinators in the country on board, somebody that led a top 20 defense last year and has had a lot of success in the last couple of seasons.
Connor, we'll wrap it up with this, and we'll let you get out of here. I know that you had on your podcast with Chris Marler, the Saturday Down South podcast. You guys discussed the Mizzou sanctions and everything that's been going on with Missouri. Can you elaborate a little bit about what Missouri was hit with and how they're going to move forward?
Yeah, so this bowl ban that they're facing for the academic fraud, you know, a tutor, you know, helped out, I think, 12 different student athletes at Mizzou, I think 7 of which were football players. And so this bowl ban that they're facing right now is being appealed. And we had TJ Moe, former Mizzou receiver and current radio host out there in St. Louis, on to talk about this. And he just kind of went in depth about, you know, Barry Odom and, you know, Jim Sterk, the AD, they're kind of under the impression that the NCAA is going to overturn this and that they are going to take away the bowl ban because there isn't precedent for it. And the belief that the NCAA levied this punishment that was way too harsh, and it was like it was trying to set an example for this belief that they're taking academics more seriously. I still question that. I still question that because the NCAA admitting fault and essentially saying, okay, you know what, we beefed up, it doesn't seem too likely to me. And the investigation, they said, is going to take, I think that they estimated 110 days, but as we know with the NCAA, that really doesn't mean a whole lot to hear this appeal. So it's an interesting dynamic because in a way it's been this rallying cry for Mizzou, and so many people have supported this belief that Mizzou got hosed by the NCAA. And if this bowl ban holds up, meanwhile, UNC is making up classes and not getting bowl ban. There are serious, serious problems with the current system that's in place. So, yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to kind of get some insight from TJ and just kind of hearing what he's heard from the coaching staff and being very close to that program. But it's going to be an interesting storyline, I think, for SEC fans because there is some precedent here. And just in terms of what this could mean for the landscape of college sports and how we view bowl games even, I think is important. So, definitely something that we're going to want to follow throughout this offseason, and hopefully we're going to get a ruling on before the season starts.
Well, Connor, I appreciate you coming on. And as of North Carolina, I mean, look, man, Roy Williams says dang and gosh, golly, and everything. So there can't be anything that happens wrong over there in North Carolina, brother, right?
Hey, I'm just like that. So you know what? I can't blame him. I don't fault Roy for keeping it clean.
Oh, I know. Well, Connor, brother, I appreciate you coming on. As always, my friend, we'll catch up soon and have a terrific weekend.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. You too.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. Terrific stuff as always. Little alliance talk. I love it. Third week. Got no football to watch. Watch the Alliance. Come on. Support some former Bayou Bengal players. Try to find the Memphis Express and hope they don't look terrible because that's what they've looked like the last. I hitched my wagon to possibly the worst team in the Alliance, Joey. And I am not regretting my decision because I like their name. We'll wrap up the first hour of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
According to a strange doctor, out of 14,605,000 possible outcomes for this next segment of Rap Game, only one...
We're in the end game now.
...doesn't result in half of the universe being snapped out of existence. Let's get back to Ray, because I don't feel so good.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Going to wrap up the first hour talking a little more Raging Cajun news. The athletics department announced yesterday that the football team has added not one but two games against Power 5 conference teams. UL will face off against the Texas Longhorns in 2021 in Austin. That'll likely be the season opener for that game, for that season. That'll be played Saturday, September 4th, 2021. It's the future meeting. They've played it twice previously in 2000 and 2005. The Cajuns scored a total of 13 points in those two games, and I want to say the Longhorns scored nearly 100. Hopefully this time around it'll be closer. But still, a marquee game for a program like the Raging Cajuns. Plus, they try to recruit Texas. They're all about keeping the guys in state, but they also try to go poach guys out of Texas. That helps with recruiting. Even if you lose, it still helps with recruiting because you have a presence in the state of Texas. So getting to go play the Longhorns is a good thing. Not only that, Louisiana will also play at Minnesota in 2023. That's the fourth time that the Raging Cajuns and the Golden Gophers have met. They've played three previous times in the early 2000s, 2001, 2003, in Minnesota. And then remember, 2002, Minnesota actually played UL at Cajun Field. So, yes, these are big money games. Yes, the Raging Cajuns are going to get million-dollar paydays. That's going to help pay for uniforms, going to pay for helmets, it's going to pay for food, okay? All those great things. But it's also more exposure, and also shows that Billy Napier's not afraid of competition. And it also continues a recent trend under Brian Maggard. They've played Alabama. They've played Ole Miss. They played Mississippi State in recent years. They're going to play Mississippi State again this year inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. That's going to open the season. That's technically the home game for UL. But they're going to face off against the Mississippi State Bulldogs inside the Superdome. And then next year, in 2020, they're going to be playing at Missouri, SEC team that we just talked about with Connor O'Gara. So, big-time opponents, Power 5 conference, big checks, and also big exposure for the Raging Cajun football program. When we come back, hour two of the Rap Game with RP3, we'll lead it off with my rant of the week. Stay tuned, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Local. From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for the locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parch III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears?
Uh-oh. RP3 is ready to sound off.
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
Serenity now!
This is more than a complaint, but less than a tirade. This is Ray's Rant of the Week.
Dear LSU fans, talking to you. There's a bit of a history here, what occurred the other night inside the PMAC, and it's crossed over to all sports. Football, basketball, baseball. This desire to leave early at a game is a terrible look that you're giving your university and the flagship school of the state of Louisiana. You did it again on Wednesday. Down by nearly double digits in overtime, LSU fans started flocking for the exits. Gotta beat that traffic. Gotta get out of here. Now, not to mention that Tremont Waters tried to make a game of it and they cut it closer. But y'all couldn't stick around another minute, minute and a half to cheer on your Tigers? Like, for real. The number 13 team in the country. A top 25 ranked team. Having the best season in a decade for LSU men's basketball. And even though they were losing, y'all couldn't stick around to keep cheering on your team? Y'all got better stuff to do than to cheer on your team. But this is what I come to expect now from the LSU faithful. Y'all did it just this last year for football. Best year in football in what? 5, 6, 7 years? Got to 10 wins. Got a Power 5. Got a New Year's Day 6 bowl victory. 10 wins. You curb stomp Georgia inside Tiger Stadium. What happened during the Alabama game? Oh, y'all hauled took us to them exits early, man. Started at halftime, bro. Third quarter, I kept seeing it. I was at the game. I'm watching people exiting, and they ain't leaving to go get a refill on their beverage. They're leaving the game. But this isn't anything new. Over and over again, this happens. It's happened in football over and over again. Happened last year against the Alabama game. It's happened in years past in that loss to Arkansas back in 2015. Remember that? Back in 2015, the loss to Arkansas. And the players notice this. And this is what y'all are doing. This ain't, oh, the radio show host is fired up because you're leaving, and he's old-fashioned, he's old-traditionalist, and he thinks if you go pay for a game and you go support your team despite if they're winning or losing, and you stay until the game is over to show your support for your team. That's how I feel. That's how I was raised. You stay the whole time. Not to mention I'm cheap. So if I pay for something, well, damn it, I'm going to stay the whole time. I'm going to get my money's worth even if my team's losing. That's just because I'm cheap. But remember back in 2015. Second consecutive loss that season to Arkansas on Saturday. Routed at home 31-14. You remember it. And fans bailed early. You remember Dylan Gordon, former tight end? He called LSU fans, quote, the worst fans ever, before quickly deleting that tweet, opting for something more elegant, which was, if that's your team, you stand by them, win, lose, or draw. It's simple. If you're a real Tiger fan, thank you. If you're not, bye. We don't need no bandwagoners as long as we win. We y'all's team. He's not wrong. There's a lot of bandwagon people that wear purple and gold. And they showed themselves again on Wednesday night inside the PMAC. They showed themselves during football season. When their team loses, all of a sudden they bail. They got better stuff to do than to support their team. They did it at the College World Series back in 2017, the last time the Tigers were at the College World Series trying to win a national championship. Fans were seen and documented leaving early because LSU was losing one of those games. Y'all sad. That is sad. That is sad, and you need someone to slap you around and get you to act right. Because being a fan isn't just when there's a parade to go celebrate a championship. Being a fan, a real fan, is riding and dying with your team even when they are terrible, even when they get embarrassed, even when they're on probation or they just simply suck. I make no bones about it that I'm a diehard Alabama Crimson Tide fan, and I catch hell for it around here. But you know what? I rooted for my team while they were on probation. I rooted for my team when they were coached by Mike Shula and losing to the likes of South Carolina. Okay? Losing in bowl games to Oklahoma State in the Independence Bowl. Your boy, RP3, I was in the stands in Shreveport in that kind of a dump of a stadium after they lost to Oklahoma State. Mike Shula had been fired. They had the crazy old man defensive coordinator that was the interim coach. And you know what me and my brother did? They lost the game. We stayed afterwards and gave Alabama players high fives and thanked them for their season and thanked them for playing for us. And they lost. Because that's the level of respect you should be showing your team. Don't be cowardly. don't be just, I want to ride on the bandwagon and I want to celebrate LSU because they're good right now. And all of a sudden, when they're not good and they have a misstep and they lose a game, I'm going to bail on them. That makes you a coward, bro. Don't be that way. Be better. Your team deserves better. Your university deserves better. And that's just not an LSU thing. I see people leaving early at Raging Cajun games, too. But LSU's a bigger spotlight right now. And your team, you realize that your football team just came off a 10-win season, and they're going to be ranked in the top 10 to start this next year and a legit contender for a national championship or at least a college football playoff spot. The basketball team is a top 25 team that could win the SEC conference tournament and is going to go to the big dance and could make a run in March Madness. The baseball team is the number one ranked team in the country. This is a great time to be a LSU fan, to be a diehard purple and gold fan. And for all you fans that ride and die with LSU, regardless if they're good or if they're bad, I ain't talking about you. God bless you. You're doing your thing. But for all you other people that just go pick up a t-shirt the day before you go to the game, and then when the team starts to lose, you decide to leave, why don't you just stay away? Because trust me, there are enough people out there, I know personally there's enough people right here in Acadiana and throughout the state of Louisiana that love them some LSU, and they'd be more than happy to show up and go support their team. And that's the other thing that you got to think of, that all these people don't think of when they bail early. You're fortunate to be there inside the PMAC. You're fortunate to be there inside Tiger Stadium. You're fortunate to be there inside Alex Box Stadium, because not everyone can afford to pay for the tickets to go to these games or to pay the travel costs that it may cost for someone from Alexandria or Shreveport or Lake Charles or Houma to go and support their favorite team, the LSU Tigers. So you're fortunate. It's a privilege to be able to be there. I understand that you may pay your money, but it's still a privilege to be able to witness and to root for your team in person and to cheer them on, because tickets and concessions and travel is not cheap. And a lot of folks out there never get the chance. There are diehard people that bleed purple and gold for LSU that have never stepped foot inside Tiger Stadium because they haven't been able to afford to do so. And the same thing goes for Alex Box, and the same thing goes for the PMAC. You got people out there that can't afford to go, and you got other people that work their bones. They work themselves to death. Shift work, factory work, working in the oil field, that don't have the time to take off work to even go to the game. And they would do anything to have the opportunity to see the Tigers in person. And you know what they would do? These folks would get there early, they'd stay the entire game, and they cheer on their team from start to finish, regardless of the outcome. So for all you folks that are leaving early, shame on you. Shame on you. Be better. Be a better fan. Stop being a bandwagon fan. And look, if you're just a bandwagon fan, you know what? Sell your tickets, do something with them, and give them to other people that are true fans that are going to support their team through thick and thin. Because you bandwagon fans out there, you're not needed. Pack it up and go cheer for somebody else. I'm done being angry, Joey. But even though the bone crusher does make me want to keep being angry, though. That'll do it for my rant of the week. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, it'll be RPOs with RP3, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Okay, game on!
Game on!
Game on!
Yeah, game on!
The commercials are a wrap. And that means Rap Game is back. Right now on 103.7 The Game.
Mr. Doubledina, Mr. Bob Doubledina, Mr. Doubledina, Mr. Bob Doubledina.
Blue poncho.
Shotgun formation. Cody snaps the questions.
Dre!
And RP3 makes the reads. This is RPOs with RP3.
Blue poncho!
Well, 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 Raymond, I'm not Cody, so I'm not throwing these to you in the name of Cody. I'm doing it in the name of Joey. And we have a handful, or as we call it down here in Louisiana, a full bowl of rice and gravy for RPO today, my man.
I had rice and gravy last night for dinner. Oh,
raised
it's delicious.
That stuff.
Oh, it's delicious. My wife made it up. It was nice. We had a little macaroni and cheese as a side.
There you go.
Some smothered pork. Oh, it was good. I'm sorry. We were doing a segment. I apologize.
Let's jump right into the run pass options, my man. So we're going to start off easy with this first one. He's done some work before in this industry with the likes of some voice acting. I think his only actual movie that he starred in was Trainwreck alongside of Amy Schumer. Of course, I'm talking about the one LeBron James, because guess what's going on with the one LeBron James? Space Jam 2 has got its release date. Now, I know some fans might have concerns, and I'm talking about the Space Jam fans out there, not the Looney Tunes fans, the Space Jams fans, considering that this one features the one LeBron James, and its predecessor, the original, had one Michael Jordan. So, Ray, give me the RPO on this. How are you feeling about Space Jam 2 with LeBron James?
I'm running with it. I know that's sacrilege. First of all, the first Space Jam was okay. I remember it. Okay, it was kind of cool. The highlight for me though was Bill Murray, but that's me because I'm a huge Bill Murray fan. You know, I'm interested. We've heard about this project for years. I already saw people. It started trending on Twitter. You know, when it was announced the release date's coming out. You know, 2021, right, or 2020. So, you know, he's about to start filming it after the season, his segment, and then it'll take him a couple years to do the animation. I don't know. You know, people are going to be up in arms about, well, you're just trying to be Michael Jordan. Well, you know, LeBron's fans, there's enough of those that'll be a hit. I'll be interested to see what they do. I kind of want him to, you know, Jordan was retired when he did Space Jam, his first retirement, or the second one, not the first one when he went to go play baseball, and then the second one. But wouldn't it be great if, like, LeBron made a decision, or if there was, like, a decision portion? Like, he's in the movie, he's in Space Jam 2, and he has to make, he says, I'm going to take my talents to Looney Tune Land, or something, you know, make fun of himself, do something like that. I'm interested to see if it's going to be, you know, done in kind of a tongue-in-cheek fashion and really kind of play it up. So, yeah, I'm running, sure. I'll watch Space Jam 2.
Good stuff. That's exactly what I wanted to hear, because you know, my friend, I'm going to be there as well. And that's to support not only LeBron James, I love LeBron, but also Looney Tunes. Grew up on that stuff. So, Ray, we're going to move on to the next RPO for the day. And this one is close to home and very, very concerning to the UL Lafayette fans. We are talking about Gunnar Leger and the UL Raging Cajun baseball team. So, Ray, any concern over one Gunnar Leger being scrapped from Friday's start?
You have to be, I'm going to pass, but with caution. Let's say that. Tony Robichaud is not going to run his pitcher into the ground. This is a guy that's coming off not one but two surgeries, right? And they're very serious surgeries. So, do you really need Gunnar to play an early season non-conference game at Sam Houston State? I don't think so. I think Tony's just being proactive. I know a lot of people, when the news came out, they were like, oh God, that means Gunnar can't pitch and everything. Well, Gunnar hasn't pitched in over a year and a half. He pitched in the opening weekend, and maybe he's just a little sore, or maybe they don't want to overdo it. And if you have enough depth on your staff to not force Gunnar to run him in the ground after he came off not one but two serious surgeries, I'm okay with that. I'm cautiously passing on being concerned about the Gunnar Leger situation. But if it does get to the point where he doesn't come back the next week, then there'll be cause for concern. Maybe he's not fully ready to come back. But not having him pitch against Sam Houston State, no. I'm cautiously going to pass on being concerned about Gunnar Leja.
All right, Ray, we're going to move on to this next run-pass option, and it involves a lot of variables.
Uh-oh.
The two main variables.
I was told there'd be no science or math today.
Hey, man. Hey, well, this one involves so much stuff. Two main ones, $2,500 and a grade one knee sprain. We are talking Duke and Zion. So, tell me about Zion Williamson for a second. I know he was a big prospect for the NBA, and a lot of stuff has come out since this injury, but I need to know what the run-pass option is on this, because Duke is in a world of trouble now that their major star is hurt.
I'm going... So what's my run-pass option here, then?
How are we looking at the future of one Zion Williamson with his tenure over at Duke?
I'm going to run. I think he plays. I really do. He's going to be day-to-day. They're going to keep him out probably the last four or five games of the season, have him maybe for the conference tournament if it's not severe. Early reports say it's not a severe injury, right? So I think also Zion's not the type of guy that's going to shut it down. He's going to want to play. Coach K is going to want to play him because he knows if he has Zion, even if it's 80% Zion, that gives him a legit chance to win a national championship because he's the best player in the country by far. He's going to be the top overall pick. So I'm going to say he's going to play. I'm not concerned with this is going to prematurely end his career at Duke, his, you know, half a year, academic year career at Duke. I think he continues to play, and I think he'll bounce back and he'll come back. Will Coach K restrict his minutes? Yes. Will they slowly bring him on? Yes. Will they be as dominant a team, a possible one seed, with him being at 70%? No, obviously. But I still say that you see Zion Williamson suit up in a Duke uni the rest of this year. Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for RPOs with RP3. When we come back after the break, here on Rap Game with RP3, we're going to talk to our good friend from Tiger Rag, Mr. Tyler Nunez, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
The show that's got,
you know, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have you.
And a host that desperately wants to be called
El Deuterino if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
We please ask that you don't call Ray that or any of the following.
The dude. His dudeness.
Or
Deuter.
Thank you. Now, back to RP3.
Two all, 13:51 to go in the ballgame. Waters in the front court. Drives. Floater. Alley-oop, rather. Cabell, Big P. Williams. Stuffs it down. The Tigers lead 44-42. Their first lead since 18:29 to go in the first half.
LSU's been a second half team. They're certainly showing it right now in this 3-minute stretch.
That was the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, and color commentator, former LSU coach John Brady on the call. LSU fans and LSU head coach Will Wade's going to hope that his team is not only a second-half team, but a first-half team when they take on number 5 Tennessee on Saturday. You can listen to the game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show starts at 10:30 a.m., tip at 11. And we're going to head out to the ARCO equipment hotline here on Rap Game with RP3 and welcome on our next guest. He covers the Tigers basketball team for Tiger Rag. It's the one and only Tyler Nunes. Tyler, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good, man. So I want to lead off with this, and I found in the comments afterwards from a couple of the players, including Nas Reed and others, that Florida was more ready to play, that they wanted it more, and the recurring theme and a lot of the post-game comments was they wanted it more, that they came ready to play. My question to you is this. How are we towards the tail end of February and LSU was not as ready as the team that was coming into the PMAC?
I think part of it is the stakes. I think LSU's pretty much staked their claim as one of the top teams in the SEC, and they're almost a sure bid into the NCAA tournament at this point, whereas Florida, the team that's fighting for their life, they're on the bubble. They've made a lot of headway over the last few weeks, but after a really rocky start at the SEC, they kind of have to, well, they don't have to run the table now, but they had to make a big statement, and they've done that these last couple weeks with big wins against Alabama on the road and LSU on the road, and I think that played a little bit of a factor. I think former Louisiana Tech coach, now Florida's coach, is a really good coach. He has those guys ready to play, and I mean they really do have one of the best defenses in the country. So I think there are a few factors that went into it, but I think just the stakes of the game were a little bit higher for Florida than they were for LSU.
Tyler, this is not the first time, though. Will Wade talked about this in the postgame presser, that he saw this coming and that Florida in a lot of ways resembles Missouri. And that was a team that, you know, they don't have a lot of height and big bodies down low. They're kind of an average team, so to speak, but they play well in stretches. They play tough. We saw this in Missouri. LSU was able to overcome that 14-point deficit and win that game. We saw this again twice against Arkansas, where they're able to rally on the road and get the win, but weren't able to rally enough at home and lost to a mediocre Arkansas team. We saw them even struggle a little bit against Georgia. How big of a concern is this moving forward? Because we know LSU is going to be amped up on Saturday versus Tennessee, but it's that playing down to the competition, playing down to the teams that are maybe more hungry. Is that a concern for the rest of the season and in particularly for the tournament? How big of a concern is that in your opinion?
I mean, it's always a concern whenever you're playing teams close that you should be kind of like people feel like you should be blowing out. I do think that LSU has it is somewhat of a good thing because when you're in a close game in a postseason situation, you want experience in those kinds of situations. And I don't think there's a team in the country with more experience in that type of situation than LSU. So in that sense, it's a benefit. But at a certain point, you're right. They have to be able to put these teams away earlier than, you know, the last few minutes of the game. They had a lot of opportunities to beat Florida. I mean, they've shot 64% from the free throw line. That's not acceptable. And really, with a lot of what Will Wade was talking about with the style of team that Florida is, I mean, if you can take away what Tremont Waters does, especially like if you can keep him from getting inside the 3-point line and kind of working from there, you're going to slow down a lot of what LSU does offensively. And I think that is something that Missouri did well. It's something that Florida did really well. And it's something that I think teams are going to try to do moving forward, because if you kind of cut off the head of the snake, the things kind of unravel from there. So I think that Will Wade has a plan to figure that out. I think as far as matchups go, he's concerned about a team that's going to zone up on them the way that Florida did in the postseason. But, I mean, he said himself, they've got a couple weeks to figure it out. They either will or they won't.
Why do you think they make the adjustment better to teams that are more like them, the big athletic teams like a Kentucky or like an Ole Miss or even like a Tennessee? I mean, they match up really well against those teams. And is it just a familiarity, or is it something that the teams like a Missouri or a Florida are doing defensively or doing with their size on out on the perimeter? What's the difference?
It's not really a size thing. I think what the big thing is whenever you pack in the defense and kind of like the way that Tremont Waters really likes to work is he likes to get inside of the three-point line, kind of near the top of the key, inside the, like, near the free-throw line, okay. And then decide whether he's going to drive himself or kick it out. And, like, he kind of makes plays from that. That's kind of his spot. That's where he likes to get comfortable. Whenever you have, like, a team playing a 1-2-2 zone or a 2-3 zone, the way that Florida-Missouri does, what it does is it packs in the defense and it basically eliminates that option for Tremont Waters, and he's not able to kind of run the offense the way he usually does. It doesn't give him as much freedom, and then from there, the rest of the offense, I mean, like, the offense wasn't terrible against Florida. They did better than I expected in a lot of ways, but it was definitely clear that Tremont Waters wasn't comfortable. He only had two points in regulation before he kind of went off in overtime, but then it was too little too late. So I think that it's just, it's a matchup thing. It's a thing that a team can do against an LSU to kind of take away their best player.
We're speaking to our good friend Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Well, let's talk about the remaining portion of the schedule here, Tyler. We got Tennessee on Saturday, and then it's what, A&M next Tuesday? That's at home as well, correct?
Yep.
And then it's a little bit of a road trip, and then they wrap up the regular season at home against Vandy, if I remember right. They have to play at Alabama and then at Florida, and then they wrap up things against a kind of a woeful Vandy team this year. Saturday's matchup. Let's look at Saturday. Despite losing to the Gators, they're still in the mix in the hunt for the regular season championship, or at least a share of it. Because if they turn around tomorrow and beat Tennessee, then it they're right there. They're still ahead of Kentucky for the regular season title. So
and they'd be ahead of Tennessee as well because of the head-to-head matchup. They control their own destiny. If they went out, they're the regular season champion.
Okay, so still everything is still in front of them. Is Will Wade doing anything differently? I know this guy is very much an analytical kind of cat, and he has a regimen and everything like that. Is he going to change anything to kind of have them rebound quickly from the Florida loss? What's his process when it comes to that, putting the bad loss behind him quickly when they have such a marquee important game just a couple days later?
I don't know if he's going to do anything differently. I think he probably ran them ragged yesterday. I had to imagine yesterday's practice was not a fun practice to be at. He was very clearly unhappy with the effort that they played with, and he was pretty tough on Tremont Waters too. So I'd imagine yesterday's practice was a lot of tough love. I'm sure that today's practice will be difficult as well, but probably not as physically pulling. Just because they don't, you know, they want fresh legs tomorrow. But tomorrow's a big game, and I don't think you – I mean, for the most part, what LSU's done isn't broken, and you don't fix what's not broken, in my opinion. So I think Will Wade knows that. I think Will Wade trusts his own process. I think he trusts his coaches and his players. I think they're going to go out there and play their try to play their style of basketball. And Tennessee kind of lends themselves to that. I think it's going to be kind of a run and gun. It's going to be an entertaining basketball game. These two basketball teams play similar styles. So it's going to be fun.
Let's talk a little bit about that, Tyler. You know, Tennessee was the number one ranked team in the country, and they got manhandled by Kentucky last week. I mean, there's no way around that. And they bounced back with a victory the other night, but they did not look great. They still looked like they had a little bit of a hangover. Tell me, you've watched the tape. You know, this was the number one team, number one ranked team in the country. What are they vulnerable at, and can LSU take advantage of that on Saturday?
They're vulnerable. It's tough to say where they're vulnerable. If they're not shooting the ball well, things aren't going to go well for them. That's one thing. The problem is they're a matchup nightmare for, like, anyone, but especially LSU, because I don't know who you put on Admiral Schofield. He plays a three, but he's built like Zion Williamson. So, like, I think you're going to have Marlon Taylor play him on the perimeter and then kind of double him whenever he gets inside. Okay. And then after that, you've got, of course, Grant Williams, who's a National Player of the Year contender. I mean, he's in lights out. He's averaging like 20 points a game or something. He's a phenomenal basketball player, one of the best in the country. And then on top of all that, they've got a bunch, like all these guys that we're talking about are like juniors and seniors. These guys aren't freshmen. So, like, they're not a very vulnerable team. That's why they went unbeaten for as long as they did. They lost that game to Kansas early in the season, and then they went unbeaten until other than that, until on Saturday against a very angry Kentucky team on the road. Vanderbilt's shown some vulnerabilities. They were able to slow them down a little bit. I don't know if LSU's the team to do that. I think they're going to try to run and gun. I don't know if that plays into LSU's favor or not. If they were on the road, I'd say it wouldn't, but considering in the PMAC, it might push that into LSU's favor. It's a really interesting matchup because, like I said, these two teams play really similar styles of basketball. I'd say that Tennessee has the talent edge, but home court advantage is no joke, especially the way the PMAC's been lit up the last few weeks.
I would assume, in your estimation then, Tyler, that Cavell Bigby-Williams is going to be a very, very busy individual
huge.
On Saturday.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tennessee is going to try to pound it inside a few times. The fact that's probably LSU's biggest asset, the fact that they have two 6'10", 6'11 guys down there, that's not really, if you've noticed, that's not something that anyone in the SEC really has other than LSU, and they use it really well. So that's definitely something they're going to have to use to their advantage. They're going to have to force Tennessee to shoot a lot of threes and then hope they don't make
them. We're on with Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag. Let's take Saturday's game out of the equation, Tyler. Mm-hmm. The remainder of the schedule is all favorable, right? They should beat Texas A&M. They should beat Alabama. They should beat Florida, despite Florida beating them the other night. I would assume that they're going to come back a little bit more angry and focused. My question to you is this. Any concern whatsoever if they do lose to Tennessee and then they've lost back-to-back games, you know, and kind of played themselves out of the regular season championship. Any concerns whatsoever that the team doesn't finish the regular season strong, that they kind of stumble and lose a bit of their confidence? Or is this team now, we're to the point of the season where even if they do lose to Tennessee on Saturday, that we would expect them to bounce back and finish strong?
I would expect them to bounce back and finish strong. Like, two of those games are against the two worst teams in the SEC. So, the first one's at home. So, or no, they're both at home. So, like, that,
yes.
Those two games should be just, like, sharpied. Obviously, it's, you know, anything can happen. But, like, yeah, I just don't see, I think the fact that they have A&M after Tennessee is good. Alabama, a team they've already beaten, that'll be a tough game on the road, but I think that Alabama's kind of lost some steam since then. And then they've got Florida, that's obviously they really want to win. And then Vanderbilt. I'm not really that concerned about it. I don't know. I mean, Will Wade hasn't really been put in the situation yet, so we don't really know how he'll react. But everything up to this point has told me that he'll react in a pretty professional and positive manner. He seems to have a pretty good head on his shoulders. He knows where his team's at, and he knows where it needs to be. So I'm not that concerned.
How do you feel, you know, we see the rest of the schedule, and, you know, we know Tennessee's on Saturday, obviously, Tyler. I mean, you already talked about the schedule. A&M, Vanderbilt are two of the worst teams in the league. Alabama is kind of trending downward, right? They seem to be playing themselves out of the NCAA tournament, while Florida has played their way in. You know, where do you expect this team, you know, for the conference tournament there in Nashville, which I know that you'll be at covering? You know, regardless if they're like the two or the three seed, they're going to be a top three seed in the conference tournament. Any of those teams, right? Yeah, they have enough talent and they're coaching, and they've already displayed that they can take down Kentucky and everything like that. It wouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Would you be more surprised if they don't reach the SEC tournament championship or if they do?
Probably if they do, but only because, like, that those tournaments are such a crapshoot. Especially, like, once you get into the semifinal range, you're talking about teams that are playing, they're either playing their second or third day in a row.
Right.
And then on top of that, like, you're playing some of the toughest teams in the SEC, presumably. They're probably either going to be playing Tennessee or Kentucky in that game. So, it's going to be tough. Making the SEC championship is tough. Luckily, LSU's put themselves in a situation where they don't have to do that. Like, they've already set themselves, as long as they take care of business for the rest of this regular season, with five games left, most of them favorable, as long as they win three or four of those, they're going to have a really nice seed in the NCAA tournament, regardless of what they do in the SEC tournament. So I don't think they have to make it to the SEC championship. I think that would really be a really fun feather in this team's cap. And I think that they're absolutely capable of doing it. I just think, though, that those games – the deeper you get into those conference tournaments, the more of a crapshoot they become. And it's just kind of hard to say that it, I expect them to make the SEC championship game.
Tyler, the other night, and I talked a little bit about this in my rant of the week, the LSU fans that decided to leave early on Wednesday. And this is something that's kind of popped up all across collegiate sports, but it's happened somewhat frequently in recent years at LSU, where you even had the tight end Dylan a couple years ago during the Arkansas loss for the football team call out the fans. He got real angry about it. That left early in that game. They left early against Alabama this year in a loss. They left early in Omaha two seasons ago for the College World Series. And then they left again early, and this is not the first time this year that this happened. The PMAC is such a great place, and they've tried to make it the Def Dome, and the fan support has been great. But for the players, they notice when fans bail early, and it has such a negative impact on the players. Your thoughts as a guy that is a graduate and everything like that, your thoughts, how do you feel about it?
Come on, man. You've driven in Baton Rouge traffic before. You know what those guys are doing.
Oh, there it is. He's going to use the traffic.
I mean, part of me gets why players get frustrated with that. I will say LSU, to their credit, LSU's players did not seem frustrated by it after the game. Part of me gets that. Part of me gets, like, especially when they leave egregiously early when the game is still, like, kind of in hand. But what we had the other night was, like, I think there were 37 or 47 seconds left, and LSU was down by 7. It didn't look very good. And, yeah, they almost came back and won. They gave themselves a chance, but it didn't look really good. And, I mean, part of me believes that it's up to the players and the team to keep the fans in the seats, you know? I think that's part of their responsibility. I think that they did a good job of getting them in the seats, and now they got to keep them there. And, like, I understand the frustration. I'm a little bit more generous to what happened the other night because I don't think that was that egregious. I think when a team's down by 7 in an overtime period that they've been stomped in with 37 seconds left, I don't think it's really, you know, unreasonable to assume that this game's over. But I also get, like, you don't want fans leaving like four minutes less in the game.
Right. Right, and that's happened more in the other sport. That's happened more,
like,
in football.
Well, in football they'll leave it like halftime. Bad enough. Like, which again, it's hard to blame. I know you've driven in Baton Rouge.
I've been stuck in that traffic more times than I'd like to.
And I think that plays more of a factor than a lot of people like to, like, think about. I think that it is hell getting out of the LSU area whenever after a big event. So, like, I know I joke about it, but, like, it really is a factor. Like, especially if I'm with my grandparents, I'm like, okay, we got to get out of here because I don't want to, you know, deal with this. So it's just one of those
things. First of all, Tyler, big ups for spending time with the grandparents. Good for you.
Of course.
Grandson.
I've been to Tiger Stadium many a time with my grandpa. It's a good time.
Nice. And look, and this is what I'll tell the fans, and this is what, because, you know, obviously you're letting everyone know that the traffic is probably a driving force of this. So everyone out there listening, instead of leaving the game early, just stick around and just crash with Tyler, and you don't have to worry about driving back.
Or no, just set up a nice little tailgate. Just sit in the back, the bed of your truck, and, you know, hang out for a little bit.
There we go.
You know?
There we go. See. This is what we do here on the Rap Game, Tyler. We solve the world's problems, brother.
Absolutely.
Well, look, man, I appreciate you making some time, as always, brother. I'll see you tomorrow inside the PMAC. It should be a terrific game and a terrific atmosphere. And I appreciate you making some time for us, brother. Get you some rest.
Absolutely. Y'all have a good one.
Tyler Nunes, Tiger Rag. We will wrap up today's show and the week of Rap Game with RP3 featuring guest producer, The Joey. I'm just going to refer you to as The Joey from here on out. It's just The Joey. Here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
His favorite breakfast food is crepes.
Oh, I love the crepes, he said. I wish I could crawl into one of those right now.
He does karate in his garage.
You want to go do karate in the garage?
Yup.
And he's always got Little River Band on deck.
LRB. I've always got Little River Band loaded up here. I got six discs in here.
Here's RP3.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. I want to thank today's guest, Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, as well as Tyler Nunes from Tiger Ag. I want to thank everyone for coming on this week. I want to thank my main man, the Joey, for doing a terrific job filling in for Cody Schutz. The newly married Mr. Schutz will be back from his honeymoon and will be back in the producer's chair next week, ladies and gentlemen. So I want to thank everyone for calling in this week as well. Just a reminder, up next, Jim Rome Show. And then after Jim Rome from 11 to 2, it'll be the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4. The brother himself, Ben Love, Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 6:30. He's going to lead you into LSU baseball versus Bryant pregame at 6:30. First pitch at 7. And then we'll take care of you this weekend for LSU as well, guys. The producers will start things off on Saturday. Only a half hour, but still tune in. The world-famous Clint D will take care of you from 10 to 10:30. Then it'll be LSU pregame at 10:30 for the Tennessee men's basketball game. And then it'll be pregame show for baseball as well on Saturday, starting at 2:30, first pitch 3. And then Sunday, we'll take care of you as well. LSU baseball will wrap up their weekend series versus Bryant, 1:30 pregame, 2 o'clock first pitch. Y'all be safe out there this weekend. Have a good time. Love each other. Don't try to be hateful. And LSU fans, stay for the game. That's all I got to say. Talk to y'all next week. Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game.